Hi everyone, where we have thoughts. I'm Anna.
I'm Joy.
I'm Crystal. Oh, okay.
One of these days we'll get it right. And where we have thoughts, we are a podcast that loves to talk about movies, in particular Oscar movies. And right now we're deep in the middle of our conversations with Oscar series. And today we're going to be talking about Tar. Tar was written and directed by Todd Field, starring Cate Blanchett, Noémie Merlant, Nina Haas, and Sophie Kaur. It is nominated for 6 Oscars with Best Picture. It is also nominated for Lead Actress for Cate Blanchett, Directing for Todd Field, Original Screenplay for Todd Field, Cinematography, and Film Editing. This is Tar. All right, friends, what did we think?
It was fantastic.
Yay, I'm glad you liked it.
You think I wasn't going to? Are you kidding me? It's about orchestra music. That's like my shit.
I knew you would, but I watched this when it came out in theaters, and I don't know why. I don't know why I was kind of nervous about it. I was like, I really loved this movie. And I was like,
I hated it. I'm kidding.
I was about to cry. Did you see that?
I was just going to be a little sad.
I guess I completely forgot she was playing conductor. So from the jump, I was like, oh my God, they're talking about music. Oh my God, I love it.
And it's not like surface level talking about music. They are talking about music.
Yes. Because like I know a lot about music, but also I don't know a lot at the same time. But I know enough to follow conversations like that. And I haven't been around when I was like, in my early 20s, I knew a lot of people who were going to college for music. So I was around those conversations a lot, nowhere near as intricate as that conversation. But I haven't been around that in a long time. And I was like, oh, I miss talking about music, like just theory and music, just like, so good.
Yeah.
It's very impressive that they were able to, Todd Field was able, and Cate Blanchett were able to one shot, basically have that interview be so intriguing,
yes,
and captivating, and like I feel like you'll know if you like this movie if you can get through that scene.
Yeah,
and I also love how it cuts through, like, or cuts back to the making of her suit. That was really great. Wow. Or you see her assistant like mouthing the intro. It's a really good way to establish everybody in a short amount of time. Good stuff.
I loved how quickly it was, like you said, establishing a lot, but how quickly it establishes her need for control.
Yes.
Because she's, you know, trying to mimic that cover. So she has, like, the seats brought into her apartment so she can practice in front of the mirror. Everything was written out for him to say by her. And you can tell when he went off script just a little bit. He was like, you know, if you have a big stocking or whatever, she was like, that was, you could tell it like interrupted her train of thought, and it to her assistant mouthing it was just like, this woman is controlled.
Yes, it's so deeply, deeply calculated. Mm-hmm. And it's so incredibly manipulative in the same way that she is, which is so interesting for like an entire film to take on that aspect, like every part of it. The music, the cinematography, the production design, the costume, every part of it took on her personality and was very much what she was. And one of the things that said that to me the most was her house, was the house where she lived in with her wife and her daughter. That is like the most like brutalism, Germany, like control, like, it's just brutal. It's just brutal. It's just like plain. It's just like down to the raw, to the concrete. Just like it is. It just, it's harsh, and it's not anything other than what it is. And it's so like the whole way the house was set up was just so much her, even though she didn't even spend all her time there. I was just like, she's that bitch. Like, I hate her, but like, it makes for a really interesting movie.
She's so curated. Her entire life is so curated. Even to like when she walks into the house and she's immediately turning off all the lights, like she is controlling the environment. She is in charge of the space. And it's the little things like you open the cabinet and there's just one metronome in there. And like, it's just all so perfectly detailed and done. The attention to detail in this movie is really fantastic, and I really enjoyed that.
I love I didn't really love it because I can't see, but like I was like, oh my gosh, this font is so small. Oof. I'm like, do I have to like sit close to the TV? This is killing me. But I do love that the credits were first. Yes, give them their due. You know, like I read a lot of people were like annoyed with that, but I think it's important to show the crew. Mm-hmm. The cast is great, but like they're not the only ones that are working on the movie, so I really liked that.
Also, I think it's more common with foreign films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, remember back in the day, like, if you watched something from the 40s or something, that happened a lot, too. I mean, the credits, yeah, they didn't show as much, but that happened all the time. Right. And I love that. I love, speaking of music, my girl Hildur Guðnadóttir was the composer. Yeah. Love her. She's still the only woman to ever win that award.
And she even got a shout-out in the film.
Yep. Yes, she did. I love that they talked about her, about Tar, about Lydia Tár being an EGOT. And I was like, now Viola Davis, yay!
Yeah.
I need to know what she won her Tony for.
There's a lot of debate on like people online like what, like talking about it. I don't know enough about Broadway to know, but they were talking about it, yeah.
I feel like she would have done orchestrations for a play.
Mm-hmm.
Not a musical so much, but she would have like done the orchestrations for a really intense play and won for that.
I read that Richard Rodgers was the first EGOT. Mm-hmm. And he got it before it was even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think because the EGOT was only coined in like the 80s or something. Mm-hmm. And it was from some actor on some TV show, and he's like, I'm gonna EGOT one day, and he has yet to win any awards. So he goes to...
Same. I don't even...
Anna sent me a trick that was like, just remember, you're only 4 awards away from an EGOT.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever you're feeling bad about yourself, just remember.
That's not that many. It really isn't.
No.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think how it was amazing how engaging I was and kept. I wonder, as someone, because I like music and it's interesting to me, I wonder if someone who isn't interested in that would feel as engaged as I was during all those conversations.
I'm interested in that as well, because we all have a touchstone with this subject. Like we can follow along, and I feel like they didn't go too hard into making it too obscure.
Uh-huh. Right.
But at the same time, I was like, they're talking very intelligently about this subject that I surface level know stuff about. And I'm able to follow it, but I was like, there's something just so captivating about that, about people having an intelligent, coherent conversation about something.
I've said this before, like, I just love watching talented people be talented.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I don't always understand the talent, just to see them do their thing, be in their element, and rock at it is, like, a really great thing to see.
Mm-hmm. And that's... on both levels, because you're seeing Lydia Tár be that, but you're also seeing Cate Blanchett do that.
Oh my God, Cate Blanchett.
It's such...
I had heard before this, like, this is her career best. And you know what? They might be right. She's so good. She's so good in, like, every aspect of acting. Like, to watch this and just be like, that's acting. Like, in the little ways that she's... her subtle movements of her face, how she's... even if it's dramatic as, like, playing the accordion, she's like... when she's trying to
scare off the neighbors.
Yeah, scare off the neighbors. What did I call her? I gave her a nickname. Hold on. Oh, Petty Jane with the bars. Because she was like, oh, okay, she's rapping. I love it. Stuff like that, that's comedic. Like, she can just hit all the notes just right. she's just so it's almost like you are, she became Lydia Tarr, essentially. She's not acting, she is her.
Yeah. I loved all the little mannerisms that she had. Mm-hmm. Like when she was lighting the matches and she was every time, and she would do like this thing with her hand in front of her face. Whenever you could tell like she was caught up in a memory or something, like she was kind of like wiping it away, or Kate Blanchett, man. Kate Blanchett for everything, for life. I love her so much. There's one shot where her eyes are in the rearview mirror. I believe she's looking at Petra in the back.
Yes.
And it's just like on focus on her eyes. And it reminds me so much of a shot of her eyes in The Lord of the Rings. I was like, it's Galadriel.
Oh my God.
She's back.
Oh my God. Shots.
This movie was gorgeous. Like, it was so well directed too. Like, oh my God. A lot of people are complaining that it was too long, but I think because I was watching it and then something came up and I had to leave. So I kind of had like a break. Little bit between. So for me, it was fine, but I can kind of see what people are like, this is long. But it's so well directed. All the concert scenes are, the rehearsal, everything is so good. All the shots underneath her where she's conducting. Oh my gosh. She's larger than life. Oh my God.
That is the most genius. I've never seen a shot of a composer, or even like of a musician like this done from that angle. And you get so much like variety. You get so much movement from that angle. And it was perfect. It wasn't even that long of a shot. It was just like maybe like 10 seconds of underneath her. And it was just like all the energy and all the everything that she had. It was just, if this had not been nominated for cinematography, I would have rioted.
How she's framed through the orchestra, the camera is between next on the shoulder of a person playing it, but all you see is her. Like, oh my God, so good. So good. Also, another thing too, like back to how well directed it is, the purposefulness in what he's doing. Like Todd Fields has that lecture scene all in one shot. So that way later on when we see it edited, we know that that's edited because of how it was shot originally.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think like the script is so good. The actors are like, or Kate Blanchett is having to deliver all of these lines. So like long takes, like that's acting. That's so hard. That's like when you talk about separating like experts to amateurs, like, I mean, come on now.
Yeah, it definitely had moments where it felt like a play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In those long shots and those uncut scenes. And I feel like I was saying last episode with the Fabelmans, I was like, I don't mind if a movie is 2.5 hours long if I'm enjoying myself. And I never stopped enjoying myself. I never felt like, why are we still here? I was like, I need to know more. I want more of her. I want more of this drama. I want more of this story. I wanted more. Question. Mm-hmm. Who do you think was doing the videos in the beginning?
What do you mean?
The video of her sleeping on the plane and of her her hotel room and the text messages. Although it was saying it was streaming live, so I find that weird.
Yeah. One of my notes is, what app is that? We can live stream.
Maybe it's a European app that we don't have.
Well, maybe. It looked really cool. I was like, I don't know that I would ever use it, but it looks cool.
Yeah. But I think we feel like it was probably curated for the film.
Right. Yeah. I'm just saying I still want it.
But I think it was, I thought it was, from my understanding, it was her assistant talking to, what's her name? One of Lydia's victims.
Yeah.
Krista. I thought it was her talking to her, and it became more apparent as it goes on when you see they've had a lot of correspondence via email, and then she quits on her and she's like, you know, Lydia Tarr.
Right. But she's texting at the book signing or the book reading, and Krista's already.
I read a really interesting theory that someone thought that Krista, the assistant, and the wife were all in on it to kind of expose her.
Mm.
You know, and they were tired of her getting away with it, and they were going to make her that bring her to a tipping point.
I kind of wish I would have gone into that a little bit more. Like, I kind of wanted it to be a little bit more scary, like a little bit more psychological. Like, I liked the whole, like, drawing thing that she kept seeing, or she kept hearing the metronome going off. And she was like, have you been in my office? Did you write on this? Like, I wanted a little bit more of that. Seeing her, like, losing her mind a little bit. And I guess, but then I don't, because I like how Todd Field just kind of gives us the information. It kind of lets us, he doesn't dumb down for the audience. And I really appreciate when a director does that, because it kind of just leaves us to think things rather than spoon feeding us information.
I have the page for Tar open on IMDb right now.
Uh-huh.
Showing a video with a lot of shots and scenes that were not in the movie. It's very interesting. There's like full-on shots of Krista's face with the design all over it, like drawn on it. And I don't know what this video is, but it's so interesting and so good.
I love that we can see it.
That's interesting.
I will find it and I'll send it to you, and so we can link it in the show notes. But it just caught me off guard because it's been playing like the trailer over and over again. So I was like, wait, I don't remember that part.
What is the hair, Mark Strong? What is that wig?
That was awful, man.
What is this?
Oh my God. It was so distracting.
I was like, God,
have just made him his regular head. Just be bald. Just be bald. It's fine.
I felt so bad for him.
I did too. Like,
he's a good looking man.
But not with that wig. Also, I was really happy to see Noemí Merlant. Oh my God. I love her. Love of my life. Wow. If you have not seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire, go see it because it's amazing.
It was good to see her in something else.
Huh?
It was good to see her in something else again.
Yes. Yes, I know. And she's really great. Yeah, she was just so good. I really like, even though, like Crystal said, it didn't go that deeply into the psychological aspects of it, I like what it did with it, because like clearly she's abusing these drugs, she's seeing animals in a basement, like she's having like all these visions, and like she's losing it clearly. It was so, like, the unraveling of her was so interesting, especially because she's such a controlled person. Mm-hmm. Having her seeing her go then completely the other direction, I was just like, yes, become a mess, fall apart, die. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, life, crumble. Go ahead.
Yes. I was like, yes, the victims are getting back at you from the death. I'd like, ugh, I was living.
I think it's interesting that, like, they have, it's, they show this as a woman in power.
Mm-hmm.
Because that does happen, and
yeah,
it's not talked about as much. But it is out there. And yeah.
I also appreciated that, you know, it's almost 2 hours and 40 minutes long, and we never hear any of the buzzwords like canceled or Me Too or like, it's obviously a movie about those things, but it's never like in your face about it, of like trying to be hip and cool and of the times. So like, if we watch this movie in 10, 15 years, when those words aren't so in the culture, like it's still going to be so relevant and so important, I think.
It's funny that you say it's about like, you know, Me Too and all that. And it, to me, that's kind of like a facet of it. It's more about like,
hey,
person who thinks they're a god and who actually isn't, and how like her going back to her like home in Staten Island, and she's seeing like her name was Linda,
oh god,
and you know, that, she's just another girl from Staten Island. Like, it's interesting to see like someone so like big-headed like slowly see her head shrink through this.
Really, it's just nice to see people get theirs. Like, it's nice to see people face consequences. Like, you're a shitty person, you should live a shitty life. Like, that's what you deserve. You're exploiting people, you're abusing people. Guess what, bitch? Now you're conducting an orchestra at a fan event.
Oh man.
I was just like, oh my God.
Busted out laughing.
I'm so
Also, this is a comedy.
Yeah.
I was laughing several times.
I think it's very interesting the things she chooses to outwardly lie about.
Right. Like,
when she fell down, she could have just said she tripped and fell, but instead she was attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Her name. Why did she need to change her name from Linda to Lydia? Like, what was the purpose? I want to know.
Sounds more. Fancier, probably.
True. I mean, but I want to know more about, like, why and when she did that. Because there has to be people who know her as Linda.
Right. Like her brother, who still exists.
Separated herself from. It's the lies, like, when she tells her wife that the handbag was a gift from Mark Strong and not, like, obviously she didn't want to tell her it was from some girl she was probably hooking up with. I found it so interesting, the things that she chose to lie about and how she chose to lie about it. I was endlessly fascinated.
Right. She's just, like, truly pathological. She's, like, far off the deep end. She definitely ain't Linda. Like, she left that behind. And ambition and the quest for power will do some shit to people. Even if you think you are, like, uncorruptible, especially in the level that she is at, and the way that people like her at the top of her craft are regarded. I mean, everything around her was just, like, not necessarily encouraging, but they weren't discouraging her bad behavior. Like, she got away with this for so long because people, you know, tend to turn their eyes, or nobody said anything, or, you know, her victims were not important.
Also, sometimes, like, they don't want to believe that a woman could do something like that.
Right, which is very naive, of course.
Because a woman who's doing good for other women. She has this program where she's trying to uplift other women. But even then, she's like, I'm starting to get caught. So let's open it up to men. Why do we need to be so segregated and sexist? Let's have men in there, too.
Right? Yeah. It's that internalized misogyny. It's like the same thing as, like, internalized racism. Like, you end up hurting yourself just because you haven't dealt with your shit yet.
Right.
Very interesting. Very interesting. God, it's so interesting.
I would watch a prequel to this of, like, Lydia growing up. I want to know what that childhood was like that made her into this.
Teenage Linda.
Oh, my God. There's going to be so much fan fiction of this. I just know it. Oh, my God.
I see it. I can see it now.
So much.
Yeah.
I love how people on Twitter treat Lydia Tarr as, like, a real person.
Right?
She has a real Twitter account.
I love that. To where people were, like, coming out of the movie going, wait, is she real? Based on a true story? I really loved that moment where she's backstage and the production starts right before she goes and tackles Mark Strong. I remember watching it in the theater going, it's weird that she's starting out back here.
Same.
Right?
I was like, maybe she is going to be out there for the big bomb moment, but then
she's so dramatic.
So I was like, what's happening? And then you see her face. I go, oh. And then she fucking tackles Mark to the ground and kicks the shit out of him.
This is my score. This is my score.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Like, all those rehearsal scenes were, like, most of those are all, I believe, except for the woman who played her wife, are all real musicians.
Ooh.
They're all, and, oh, my God. Just watching all of those scenes were just, like ascension. Like, there's the end of, oh, my God. That part where it's the end of Vadachetto, and it's, like, the, you know, it's very quiet, and it's very, very ending, and she's, like, and I was like, oh, my God, it was beautiful. You're right. All that stuff was so amazing. Oh, my God. I can't get over it.
I feel like I just watched something else where they were talking about Mahler as well. Oh, now that's going to bother me. I'll figure it out later.
Have y'all ever listened to Mahler?
Not on purpose.
That's right.
I'm sure if I heard it, like, in a movie or in a show or something, then that's the only way I would have heard it.
He's probably been on a study playlist or two, but
Mm.
Just curious.
I'm gonna send me some links. Send me some songs. Let me see.
Just the whole number, the fifth, the whole thing.
The whole thing. I love a good cello. I love a good bass. I love a good strings, the violins. I love a good dramatic string.
I really liked what she was saying about her interpretation of the fifth and how, you know, she was coming at it from Mahler's perspective of when he wrote the piece rather than like what we know now. I thought that was very interesting and I appreciated that point of view.
That whole conversation, that whole like analyzing of that was so interesting to me because we had to do that so much for like art and art history, because like when a painting was made and what part of the artist's life makes it puts into perspective, and it gives you so much context of like what it is and why, because they're not a lot of it seems, especially a lot of like contemporary art, seems very like nonsense and like I could do that and whatever. But once you get into the why and the when and the how the artist was like feeling when they did this, it makes so much more sense. Because to me, I had always, like, one example is like Rothko. I had always looked at Rothko and I was like, okay, so the canvas is almost all entirely one color. Okay, and get why? There's no reason. But I went to the Rothko Chapel in Houston years ago, maybe like 12 years ago or so. And the way that the paintings are arranged and the way the paintings are made in that space gives them so much more context. And like you can read his, you know, his purpose behind it. And suddenly it wasn't just a piece of canvas with like mostly one color on it. It there was perspective there. And so I love that. I love hearing it from a music perspective. I hadn't heard that before. And I was like, oh, you're right. Oh, wow. So that was fun.
Yeah, and I love that she was calling Leonard Bernstein Lenny, like their old pals, Lenny.
I couldn't help but think about it whenever it showed that the cover of that vinyl, those behind the scene pictures of like Bradley Cooper in his biopic for that movie. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, oh my God, look, there's the picture. It's right there.
Also, I loved how in those live streamed messages or whatever they were doing, they're looking in her, I think it's in her hotel room, where they're like, she thinks she's being so unique or funny or something, but she's really like copying someone else. Like this isn't her original idea. She's copying Mahler's album cover. Like she's not as unique and as quirky as she thinks she is. I liked that someone was pointing out, like, we see you. We see you being.
Also, like, it wasn't like she was totally discreet about the things that she was doing. Because, like, she's clearly showing favoritism to this new member of the orchestra. And doing it in front of everybody with like basically no shame, like, girl, like, you're not that smart, you're not hiding it that well, like we can tell. But it also, like, that's kind of how people are once they've hit past the point of no return. Like they're already in their heads, they're untouchable, they're basically God, you know. And it's just,
I think, like, when people are so outwardly about things like that, it's because they've gotten away with it for so long.
Yeah. It's basically just bragging at that point. Like, mm-hmm. I can do. And just, like, just showcasing how great they are, which is just...
In front of her wife.
In front of her wife! Oh, my God. That was the thing. It's like, every time the shot cut over to her wife, I was like... She's not stupid. Like, she knows what's happening. And then later on when she confronts her and is like, I could have gotten past that at some point, but, you know, I think this is too much. It's like, she knew for a long time. Maybe I'll give her the benefit of the doubt and say that she didn't know to the extent of it, but, like, she's not hiding it well. She knew what was going on.
Yeah, I also love that Sharon pointed out like how transactional their relationship was. She's like, I've known from the beginning that you were with me because you wanted something from me. You wanted information about how to get to the top here. And I provided that for you, given that I was, you know, getting something from you in return. And I've stopped getting that.
Right.
Beautiful.
So calculated. So, like, so clinical. Just everything about her was so clinical. Like, anytime she showed any sort of like physical affection, it was very stiff, it was very stifled. And anytime she gave any like verbal affection or verbal affirmation, it just felt so like foreign in her mouth. Like it wasn't natural to her. It's just
because I don't know things. I have a question. What is a U-Haul lesbian? I don't know what that is. I knew it was going to be laughter, so here we go.
A U-Haul lesbian, it's just a term that they use for lesbians that get together after the first date. They basically, move in with each other because there's this, like, stereotype of, like, lesbians will, like, fall in love after, like, one date and be like, oh, my God, we're going to move in together. Let me grab my U-Haul and all my stuff and I'll be there. And then they stay together for years. And they're not like, it's not 100% like untrue, but it's also like, you know, it's also a stereotype. So it's not for everybody. It's not.
During the lecture, she said that. And I was like, what is that? I had no like idea what that could even be. And I was like, I'm just going to ask.
Do you have any notion of what you imagine that was?
I had no idea. I was like, what? It's like, to me, those words didn't like fit together. So I was like, what could that even mean? And I was like, is this some slang? I don't know. But like, I don't think Lydia is that cool. Like that she would know that. I don't know. I didn't know. And I was like, I'm going to ask.
That's so funny.
Kids, or I guess kids probably know. I don't know anything.
I want to find someone who doesn't know what that means. And I want to ask and be like, what do you think that means?
Yeah, I had no idea. I was like, U-Haul. And then I was thinking, like, what? I didn't want to think about it too much because I was so intrigued in the movie. So I was like, right. U-Haul, like, truck, like, strong. Like, I didn't know.
I love this.
Like, I'm destination, like, determined or something. I don't know.
She's going to run you over with her U-Haul.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Now I feel dumb.
No, I love it. Oh, my God. This is so great. I don't think I've met a person in a long time that doesn't know what that was. So this is fun for me.
Oh, God. Okay. Anyway,
you're so cute, Crystal.
I regret asking a question now.
No. I love that.
I think it's interesting that in that lecture scene with the U-Haul lesbian comment where she talks about, or that guy that's like, I don't really care for Bach because he was like this old white guy, he doesn't appeal to me, whatever. And she's like, well, he did a lot of great things, so get over it, basically, to him.
Yeah.
Which I feel like that's a conversation we have a lot of the times in media now, is like things of back then were produced by not a lot of great people, but yet they're still highly regarded. So where's the line of like, can I really appreciate this? How much do I appreciate it? Interesting.
I think she had a good point, even if she was coming at it a bit harshly, of saying, like, you can't ignore what he's done and what he's given to this art form. You can say all the bad things about him. You can know all the bad things about him, and they're all true, but that doesn't take away from the work. That doesn't mean you go out and, like, praise him or whatever, but acknowledging, I think you have to acknowledge it in order for it to move on.
Yeah, just it becomes like history. Like,
yeah,
we know of them because of what they did, not because we like stand for them or whatever the case is.
Right.
I stand for Bach.
I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, other than the obvious reason.
I feel like some Juilliard bitch that has like a stan account for Bach on Twitter or something. TikTok.
Oh my God, I have not gotten to like classical TikTok or classical Twitter.
TikTok? Oh my God, you should. Yeah. Bet you would love it there.
I want to know more about her time in Africa.
Oh my God. Feels racist to me.
Yeah, it felt like, I don't like the way that sounds.
No.
That's why I want to know more. Like, this... I find her very interesting and very complicated, and I want to know what I want it all.
The fact that there wasn't a lot of people of color in the movie can pretty much tell you that the Africa really didn't do much to her. It just was like a vacation for her, or yeah. Giant photo op probably.
That conversation in the lecture hall is so interesting because she's at the intersection of so many identities, but also like so much privilege at this point in her life. So it's like, yeah, she can kind of speak on it, but also like, you also have to acknowledge like what you have and like that you have things that these students don't. Like you're an accomplished conductor and these kids are still learning. So like, it's not as easy to like just shut them down for what they think or what they feel. I think a lot of like professors will do that, or just a lot of people at like higher status in whatever you're not just studying, but like whatever you work in, like it's easy for you to say that when like you're kind of untouchable at that point. So it's the art versus the artist. And like, if you can at least acknowledge and not just be like, oh yeah, nothing bad to see here, you know, but I mean, how much can I really trust her? Because like, look at the shit she's done. So of course she was willing to just like ignore what other people have done before her. So
right. I really thought that the edited clip of that lecture was hilarious.
Yes.
Of them pulling out the word masturbate and her touching him on the leg and her like snapping in his face, making it all look so much worse than it was. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's Twitter. That's a lot of Twitter.
Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. Yeah. That was very true to life.
So I listened to Keep It podcast with Ira Madison and Louis Fertel. And they were talking about this movie. And Louis Fertel said it was Blue Jasmine times Black Swan times Phantom Thread. And I was like, oh.
Whoa.
I like that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's been a long time since I've seen Blue Jasmine, but I remember walking out thinking, Kate Blanchett.
I mean, that woman does not miss. What is she? There's nothing she's done that's bad. Even when she's in a stupid Marvel movie, she's going to be the best thing in it. Or a dumb, like, Cinderella movie, she's going to be the best thing in it. Like, think but about it. She's going to act. You know what I mean? Like, top notch all the time.
Made me think of Crystal and I last week. We went to a screening of a movie. What was it called? Of an Age.
I wanted to see that so bad.
It was good. But his friend in it was like wanting to go to acting school and she was going to be famous because we can't all be the next Cate Blanchett.
My favorite part when she's like, oh, you'll be just like Nicole Kidman. She's like, nope, Nicole Kidman is shit. I don't want to be her.
Oh, my God.
We're in an AMC. She's going to hear you. She's like the president of this AMC.
She's going to, like, come out of the screen and attack.
Yeah, I was, like, looking around like, oh, my God, is she here, Nicole? Yeah, that was a great movie. If you happen to catch it, Of an Age is really great.
The next day on Twitter, like, the official... there was an official tweet promoting the movie and all of the comments under it were so disgusting. It broke my heart of people saying some homophobic, awful shit.
Oh my God, I didn't see that. Like,
they didn't learn from bro. Nobody wants this shit. Quit shoving it down our throats. Oh great, an Australian Brokeback Mountain. All kinds
of. Oh my God, where were you reading this? I didn't see that at all.
It was from like whatever the producer of the movie, like Paramount or whatever, like that kind of official tweet with the trailer attached to it. I was gonna retweet it and say something, but I was like, so mad I couldn't form words. So I like put it away and I forgot about it. Yeah, it was gross. Great movie. Go see it.
It was a good movie. It was a solid four stars, I think.
Agreed.
Anything else?
The scene where she takes the new cellist out to lunch and she's talking about something that they did, honoring the person. They go and lay the flowers. She goes, "We do it on March 8th. She goes, "Is that her birthday?" And she goes, "No, it's International Women's Day." I was like, "Also the day my niece was born."
Woo! Bow, bow, bow.
Shout out. Anyway.
Also, like, genuinely, what a fucking creep to, like, go back and watch, like, a video of her performing. She's
at tour.
I know, but, like, performing at 13 years old and, like, that just, the whole scene, I was just like, this is gross. This is so gross. Ew, ew, ew. I'm uncomfortable. The end.
Also, barf warning. If anybody's, like, barfing, there's barfing in this movie.
Oh, towards the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, EDM, the credits, I loved that. I was like, this is unexpected, and I'm here for it. Love it.
Oh, man. What else?
Are we ready for categories?
Yeah, let's do it.
For best picture, do we think it should be here?
Yeah.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Hundo P. Lead actress for Kate Blanchett.
Yes.
Obvi.
If it wasn't Michelle's year, I would 100% want it to be Kate Blanchett.
This is so disheartening, this entire thing, because Kate Blanchett has won already. Mm-hmm. But this is her best. So, like, I want it to be Michelle Yeoh so bad. Because she's due for accolades of that nature. But Kate Blanchett was really great. And now I understand the struggle of these two this entire season. I get it, everybody. I get it.
Yeah.
I don't want it to happen. But if Kate wins, I won't be completely upset. Only because it was good.
Right.
But she's won before. Also, there's people on Twitter are like, I'm not even going to see Tar because Kate Blanchett was part of the Andrew Riseborough campaign.
She was?
She's one of the ones who was very vocal, not only, like, talking about her on the red carpet, but also when she would win awards, she would talk about Andrew Riseborough and how this is a great performance, people go see it. So it's, like, that's what's making me not want her to win. Not because of that, but, like, more just, like, you've already won, and it's fine. Doesn't mean you weren't fantastic in this movie. You were fantastic. But that's, like, my... There's some people who are, like, boycotting Tar for that reason.
Dang. Good for them.
Are y'all going to see To Leslie, by the way? To Leslie?
Fuck no.
I'm a little intrigued. It was already on my radar prior to this.
Okay, look at you.
So, like, I'm not against it, but I'm not, like, eager to.
It's not if it's easily available, maybe, but I don't think it's... on any streaming service, right?
I don't think so.
I saw the trailer, and from seeing the trailer, I was like, I've seen the whole movie. I know exactly what this performance is going to give me. I know exactly what the script is going to do. I've seen this movie a million times. I'm not surprised. I don't give a shit. No. Speaking of seeing things a million times, as great and as nice and as tight as this script is, we have seen the story before, but it's refreshing to see it from a very, like a... Like, I mean, honestly, just, like, well done. It's just, like, a really well done. Like, the script is good. The directing is good. The acting is good. The production is good. Like, it's really good.
Yeah, now that I think about it, I wonder if I would be so enthusiastic about it if it wasn't about classical music.
Yeah, it'd be... Like,
I'm such a huge fan of that.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what other people say who aren't as, like... musically inclined.
I think it's definitely like technically very, very well done.
Yeah.
A
technical marvel.
And you can't deny the talent behind the camera, in front of the camera, all the way around. So her being such a champion for Angela Rosso was a little bit like, about this it.
Thing. Yeah.
But I can see why she's won awards, because she was really great.
I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit scared after her winning the BAFTA. Just a little thinking I know how this category is going to go. And
we'll see about the SAGs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's this weekend.
Mm-hmm. And side note, because of the BAFTAs, I'm pretty sure that Austin Butler is going to win Best Actor, and I'm kind of annoyed by it.
I'm so fucking pissed. Like, that's so unnecessary. That's so unnecessary. He's going to have a better role later on in his life that's not going to be a stupid-ass biopic. But this is what we're going to go with. Again, mediocre.
I'm so sick of men winning for biopics.
Agreed.
Anyone winning for biopics, but especially men, because, like, the male biopics have been terrible.
And they've been dominating this category for years now.
Yeah, I think it's been, like, 5 out of the 6 years.
I agree with you. I just wish that Taron Egerton would have gotten as much recognition.
That's the only one. Yeah, that's the only
Rami Malek in his fucking teeth. I can't.
The only one who deserved to win for a biopic was Taron Egerton, and he wasn't even fucking nominated, which is disgusting. He's better than Elvis. He's better than Rami Malek. Better than the fucking Joker. Like, no. No. No.
Next category is directing.
Yeah, it was very well directed.
You know what I love is that he's only done, like, very few other things before this. And he's never directed. I think he only had, like, one other directing credit for, like, a full-on movie. But the other ones were, like, shorts and stuff.
This was his first one in, like, 16 years, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, since 2006 or something.
Yeah.
He did, like, Little Children with Kate Winslet, I think the name of the movie is.
Uh-huh.
And In a Bedroom in, like, the late 90s or something. I can't remember.
97, yeah.
You saw Little Children? Did you like it?
I think we've talked about this in our Lincoln episode. Because in it, it's about a small community. It's Kate Winslet and Patrick, I'm pulling it up now, Wilson, but there's a pedophile in the community, and he's played by Jackie Earl Haley, and so, like, that's where I know him from, and so when we saw him in Lincoln, I was like, ooh, like, he gave me kind of, like, the creeps. I haven't seen it in a long time. So I can't really talk about how great it was, but it was definitely memorable. I remember a lot of parts of it. Patrick Wilson and Kate Winslet having sex all the time. Like, it's not a bad watch.
Both hot. That's honest endorsement of the movie. Not a bad watch.
Hot people being hot.
I can't. Yeah, he's a great addition to this category. Congrats. Next.
Just kind of tying back to what we were saying in the last episode, like, this is such a good category, but there are still so many people that should be here.
Yeah.
Anyway, next up is original screenplay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
It is very original, and it is a screenplay.
And it's well done.
I don't know if it's, like, very original, but it is very well done.
Yes, yes. It's not very original, but it's very well done, yes.
Cinematography.
Yeah!
This is the one I was talking about at the beginning of the season when I was saying, like, it's harder for me to judge cinematography when it's set in, like, a metropolitan area, but in this one it stood out to me.
Oh my god. No. Like, it was, like, so, so good. It is... It's harder to distinguish when it is in a contemporary era, but shit, when it's done well, you can tell. There's no hiding it. There's no denying it. It's just flawless all the way through. Things that the camera was doing some really interesting things when she was opening the window when she's in in the Philippines. It follows her. There was two scenes where the camera went from steady cam to, like, shaky handheld. Yes. And it was, first of all, very creepy scene when she threatened that little girl. I was terrified. I was like, this bitch could kill me. But it went from steady to, like, shaky cam, and it was, like, the perfect the perfect decision to make in that moment. Yes, I first of all, I love that, like, I can now tell when, like, cameras are switching or, like, different lenses are used. I'm like, oh, look at my brain, bitch. But also, like, shit, this was so good. I was just eating it up visually.
All the stuff, too, in the, like, that abandoned house or whatever with the dog, all that was really great. There's even a shot of her towards the beginning where she is in the stands or in the seats of the auditorium, and she's writing something down, and it's just framed where it kind of looks like patterns, and her head's just there. Oh my God. All the rehearsal scenes are filmed great. Mm-hmm. Even the shots in the car where they're having conversations, like,
yeah,
all that, it's everything. It's so good.
One of my favorite shots is when she's in her other apartment and Olga is at the piano and you see her in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And then when Olga starts to play her piece, she, like, you can see her kind of stop and just slowly kind of look her way. And she's, like, in the background in the shadow. I just thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah, I love when filmmakers have, like, a place for the camera and they just kind of let the actors live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It feels so real. It feels like we're there with them, you know? I love that.
Yeah, and it also has to be done intentionally, which was very much done intentionally in this. Especially because there was a lot of times that they chose not to put the camera on her face. They put it on whoever was with her. Or they just, like, the camera wasn't even, there wasn't even faces to camera, but you still got the intention behind the scene. So the director made very good choices. And the cinematographer was just phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Comparatively to anyone else on here, I think I'm probably going to only see, oh my God, I might see Empire of Light. I really want to watch Bardo just for the cinematography, but I don't know if I'll get a chance. But so far, this is my winner.
I really want eventually, I say this, I really want to watch all of Roger Deakins' films, all of that he's done cinematography for.
Uh-huh.
But I say that having only watched one of the James Bond films so far, so don't hold me to it, but I really want to do that.
Deacon's high, stand up.
I really need you to watch Sicario, because Sicario was so visually stunning, and it's a movie that I wouldn't normally, like, gravitate towards, and I don't think it's not super mainstream, but it just did so many things correctly, and cinematography was one of those.
He's definitely on my list.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, okay. Like, well, I really liked, what was the one? Oh, Prisoners. It was also really gorgeous, but also a lot to take in.
I needed that. Yeah.
Great film. Our last category is film editing.
Yes.
It is up there with The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everywhere, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Tar, and Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, this is a good spot for it.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
I agree as well. My pick is still Everything Everywhere, but...
Same.
It's hard to imagine this being in any category that we would disagree with, actually. At least for me.
Yeah.
I think it could have gone for production design.
For sure. 100%, yeah. Even though one of the things I'm sure were already there, like architecture-wise, but yeah, production design, mm-hmm.
The set dressing of, like, their houses and their apartments.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Costuming I would have been okay with, because Kate Blanchett is wearing some fabulous clothes in that.
Like, that whole scene, whenever they're, like, doing her measurements and all of that stuff, I was like, this bitch knows her clothes. Like, it's so nice to see, like, you know, tailoring and alterations, like, in something other than, like, in my job. So it's really nice to see, although I have to say some of those pants were not fitting correctly in the seat hip area, and I was like, you gotta fix that, that's not all the way there, but everything else, it was fine.
So let's do some rankings.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Ooh.
This was harder than I thought it would be. So for me, at the very bottom in number 7, I have Avatar, followed by Elvis, All Quiet on the Western Front, Fablemans. And then 2 and 3 was really hard for me to decide. But I went with, in 3rd place, Banshees, in 2nd place, Tar, and in 1st place, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Exact same. Yeah. I mean, Everything Everywhere was just too emotional for me to really put it any lower.
Yeah.
I mean, Tar was the expert, and Banshees was also enjoyable. So it's those three are like the top three for me. But yeah, I think Everything Everywhere, just the impact that I felt topples it over Tar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Everything is such a good marriage of like technical ability versus and including like emotional substance. I think it does both of those things really well. My list is the same as you guys, except Elvis is ahead of All Quiet, and it's only because I didn't see All Quiet. But Avatar is still in the bottom, and Everything is still number 1. So, wow, I guess this year is not going to be that interesting.
I feel like that once we got here, well, I think the next few will definitely shake it up a little.
I thought this one would, but it I thought this one would do it, but it hasn't. So. Okay,
so that's it for us on Tar. We've got 3 more, and then Oscar night.
Woo! I'm almost there.
So keep listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.